Well, thank you for having me here. I would like to take on the question of the day, what is keeping the criminal justice system in place. And I would like to look at the Canadian situation particularly, and at some of the contradictory forces to which I think are playing on our criminal justice institutions. This particular section of the day is called the prison industrial complex. I'm not sure we can really claim that such a thing exists in Canada. Obviously, the term is modeled on Eisenhower's military industrial complex, and certainly some successor institution that I think one could properly call a prison industrial complex seems to be emerging in the United States. I must say I don't see evidence that that's the case in Canada. The few so far small efforts at privatization are all more or less embattled, and so I just don't see the evidence of that kind of industrial lobby or industrialization of the prisons in our country. I think indeed that the Correctional Service of Canada has tended to take perhaps only baby steps, but at least steps in the opposite direction. However, we have seen very substantial increases in the number of our prisoners during the last generation. And that's the first thing I'd like to talk about, why that has taken place. I think, you know, if one looks back as far as 1975, one can see with the abolition of the death penalty, the institution of extremely long terms for murder. The average sentence served is now 28 years in Canada, just a notch below the United States and higher than anywhere else in the world. So that's obviously had an impact. We've seen the emergence of a victims' rights movement, which I think, seen in its broadest terms, is a watershed, a revolution, potentially in the criminal justice institution, but its short-term impact was certainly to increase punishment levels, because that was the available coin in which the victim's harm could be recognized. That was the available demand that victims could make, and so it has been channeled in that way, and that, I think, had a strong impact on tightening of bail hearings, tightening of parole hearings, popular pressure, which tended to work on judges to increase sentence length, all of which pushed our rates of imprisonment up. Obviously, we've lived through and are still living through a very unsettled period, virtually a change in world systems, which is deeply unsettling, anxiety-provoking. And since the 60s, I think there's been a widespread feeling that there's an increase in unruliness, moral disorder, all of which are conditions which the criminal justice institution is suited to in a certain sense. It answers. It's an easy, available, off-the-shelf answer to all those concerns. And on top of that, I think we've seen criminal justice policy turned into a commodity in a certain sense, a political resource in a way that was not the case, I think, in any Western country before the 1980s and the way it has been since. And we've seen that in Canada, too. So it's been a way in which political movements can gain advantage, and that has happened. And amongst those who should know better, and those who have the evidence, the experience, the knowledge, there has been, I think, a real timidity, a fear of challenging this punitive mood, this sort of restorationist political movement. One could look at the Liberal government in Ottawa, which was probably the closest thing Canada will ever see, through some freakish circumstances, to a politically invulnerable government. They literally had no opposition, and yet they still blew in the wind on criminal justice policy and several notable cases. So there has not been a will to lead public opinion there. So generally we can say that the prison is in a sense the shadow of an emerging order, and conditions have been, seems wrong to say it, ideal for prison growth, and that has given us a substantially increased prison population, which is still a fraction what the American rate is, but it's higher than any other country, I think. Portugal, I'm not sure, but I think it's the second highest. However, paradoxically, at the same time, we've seen the growth of both the theory and practice of what is now conventionally called restorative justice, although it has many other names, and I know that name is contested, and some would prefer transformative justice, and some formerly spoke of reconciliation, but I think it's like something I was involved with years ago was homeschooling, a really terrible name for an attempt to get outside of the school system, and yet homeschooling stuck as the conventional label, and one couldn't, you could go through all sorts of contortions to explain how you were de-schooling, and people would look at you and say, oh yeah, you're a homeschooler. And it's probably a little bit the same with restorative justice now. The name has stuck. So I will use it. And I think there has been a remarkable change during this generation. We've seen the emergence of all sorts of innovations in victim offender mediation, in sentencing circles, in conferencing of various kinds, in Aboriginal communities, a variety of new institutions of the type of the Elders Council or others. And this all seems to have come to a kind of fruition within the last 5 years, where we now see restorative justice actively adopted as a policy within the Correctional Service of Canada, within the National Police Force, the RCMP. The province of Nova Scotia has adopted a comprehensive restorative justice initiative, which at least according to its rhetoric, when its four phases are completed, will make restorative justice an option for all Nova Scotians going through the courts, with provisos, but that's the claim. So we've seen the adoption of new sentencing principles in revisions to the criminal code, which came into force in 1996, in which reparation becomes an object of sentencing, in which the offender's acknowledgement of responsibility becomes an important principle, in which all sanctions short of all available sanctions should be, that are reasonable, I think the law says, should be considered before imprisonment. This new section of the criminal code has been endorsed by this and given a generous, strong interpretation by the Supreme Court in its decision in the case of Tanis Gladue a couple of years ago, a year and a half ago. So, and the term has gradually seeped into public awareness. I wouldn't say it's on everybody's lips yet, but it has in some very substantial sense landed, become part of a public debate. It's very much there. So I would see Canada then as poised in a balance. That's an old image. And I think the main danger that is there at the moment for restorative justice after its touchdown or arrival is that it may be quickly domesticated or marginalized. It may stall, and indeed there's some evidence, I think, that is happening and tends to happen. The movement for circle sentencing, if you just take Saskatchewan, which was one of its points of origin, its home bases, I'm presuming everyone knows what it is, but essentially it's the judge conducting a sentencing hearing in a community circle with advice and consent from the relevant community involved from the side of both offender and victim. Now that seems to have considerably abated. There seems to be already an exhaustion that set in. The same people couldn't keep doing it. There are many fewer sentencing circles being done, both in Saskatchewan and the Yukon, than there were 5 years ago. In the case of conferencing, although its use tends to increase, and I think the RCMP estimates something like 2,000 resolution conferences were held under their auspices in the last year, there's also been a very fast movement to restrict this to minor cases. So beginning with the first experiments that I'm aware of in Sparwood, British Columbia in the early 90s, within 2 years it began to spread rapidly in British Columbia communities, and the government immediately made very restrictive guidelines as to when this was to be used. So again, it's to be held at the margin. One sees over a longer time with victim-offender mediation a similar tendency, I think, that it has difficulty breaking out of a certain section of cases, which I wouldn't like to call minor, because I'm not sure there's ever really a minor case. It's never minor from somebody's point of view, but they're not the most difficult cases faced by the criminal justice institution. So there is a danger, I think, that these new initiatives are going to stall, become what community corrections were in the 60s, diversion in the 70s. The criminal justice system has been through these cycles before. And there is clearly a powerful inertia which tends to hold these things back. Now, the main element of that, I think, is that our political society as a whole still measures seriousness, the seriousness of response, in the coin of prison time. It's a settled habit. It's a common sense, and to that extent, it's self-perpetuating. It's what we expect. It's the reason why victims' rights were immediately translated into the coin of more imprisonment. And I think it tends to keep us, to hold us where we are. Now, against this, so this is an institution of undoubted political utility, which tends to perpetuate itself by creating hostility and by its easy availability as a political answer. But against this, I would put the fact that we are living in changed or new times, and I think this institution is also exposed as never before, demystified as never before, that the whole liberal, individualist, contractarian account of justice, procedural account of justice, on which it's based, is exposed in a new way. One can say, since I've just been passed a two-minute note, that this is generally reflects the end of the modern period of which our liberal criminal justice institutions are one expression. So I think there is an opening. There is a very definite opening, despite this surge of imprisonment, despite this restorationist mood, which, you know, at our most optimistic, we might take as a kind of sunset effect of the old age. It may be more, but I think there is an opening, and I think what has to happen in that opening, for me anyway, is a dialogue, is an attempt to build bridges, as an attempt to engage the concerns of the wider community about harm, about guilt, about offending, about punishment. Now, I will, how that is to be done, I'm not, you know, I think I won't try and answer that in 2 minutes. But I think this way of thinking that is now called restorative justice has come a long way. in a few years, and I think it has a long way to go. But I think that there is some hope that we can demonstrate to our whole society that there is a better way.